Now we have Rashi Bansal from BT Financial Group and Tim Andrews from Finity Consulting. They'll talk about gaining the upper hand on the weather. With around 14 years of general insurance experience, Rashi is currently the appointed actuary for Westpac General Insurance Limited. And Tim has worked in insurance for over 30 years and currently is the appointed actuary for three insurers and leads the Finity's Commercial Lines Pricing Practice Group. Both Rashi and Tim are interested in weather claims and how they can be most effectively managed. So let's hear it from them now. Thanks.
Thank you. What was the insurer's response to the recent weather, in the kind of last 5 years' weather? I think I saw surprise that the kind of costs were coming through like they were. I think I saw blaming the bad luck, keep having this run of bad luck. I certainly saw blaming the weather, blaming people, blaming climate change. We saw change. We saw quite a lot of change in the last 5 years in the way insurers are responding and pricing for weather risk, in terms of the systems they use, the algorithms they use, and the level of rates they're charging. All of that caused Rashi and I to think about, is there more we should have been doing sooner? So what could insurers be doing to make sure they get on top of the weather? And that's really the thrust of what we're going to talk about today. Now, of course, they can't get on top of the weather, so that's a bit of a misnomer to say gaining the upper hand on the weather. I think the best we're going to do is kind of get our galoshes on and run outside and have a bit of fun in the rain instead of staying dry. But hopefully we can do that in a way that's going to minimise the impact on the portfolio. So we're going to talk about some of the strategies that insurers might use, some of the levers they've got to manage the risk, and we're going to talk a bit about the kind of way they look at the cost of weather and is that the right way of measuring it. Now, I think we put this presentation together before we realised we had 20 minutes, so it's far too long, so we're not going to go through all of it, and it's there to have a look at the detail if you want to. We're going to focus on And I should say some of this is not new. I'm not going to pretend everything in this presentation is new material, because it's not, and especially some of the stuff around just measuring the performance. I like to keep banging that drum because I feel it's an important one to bang. We can do better in the way we look at the profitability of the property classes to help the insurers respond, because the way we look at the profitability is essentially the signals we get that drive the changes that we make. So we're going to spend a bit of time looking about the way we measure performance and the way we do planning, and then we're going to look at some of the kind of pricing and portfolio management initiatives an insurer might take.
So we're going to start from just looking at historical performance. This is the home portfolio. So what we've done here is got nearly 20 years of data. And as Tim said, this is nothing new. Everyone's seen this before. We had a really benign claims period up to 2007. And then post-2007, we've had 5 years of really extreme weather events and experience come through, which you can see in the blue bars there as well. The triangles, little red triangles on the top, are where there was a strong La Nina year. So you can see it's really well coincides with strong La Nina, the occurrence of weather events. The 99 was actually the hailstorms, the Sydney hailstorms, and that was actually quite a strong La Nina year as well. If we go to the next slide, Tim. This is just the underlying profit margins with the same period. So you can see, what appears to be the case is that we've had really good, quite strong insurance margins up to 2007 again. And 2008 to 2011 were poor insurance margins. 2012 has improved again because insurers have actually made a lot of changes to their portfolios. They've put through quite a few price increases, improved the way they do pricing, and more granular. But this actually is not the picture that we actually think is underlying that.
Yeah. And by the way, if you go back to some of those JP Morgan Deloitte surveys and have a look at what the industry was saying about performance, around about here they were saying they thought the COR was 90. So it was pretty well reflecting the profitability that was coming through. They thought that's the level of profitability where we've got a book that's running at about 90. Mm.
So what we've done now is we've actually added red bars onto that chart, and this is what we think the underlying insurance margins are over this period. So up till 2007, 2008, we actually think insurance margins were low to negative. And the reason, the way we've calculated those is we've actually normalised weather events there. So we've taken out the actual weather events and replaced them with a long-term expected average. So even though we had benign years, we actually think if you add back what would be a normal level of weather claims, you could actually see the profitability in the book was quite poor. And even though insurers have only started doing price increases up in 2012, that's actually the best year out of the history of 20 years of the home portfolio. So if insurers actually had been looking at a picture like this before, where they actually were allowing for the fact that weather was benign, they actually could have made decisions on their pricing and their approach to pricing and even the way they market much in advance of those poor years coming through from 2008 to 2011. So, you know, this sets the context for the rest of our paper. So what can we do so we can actually see this picture far earlier than where we did see it? So we're not going to talk about reinsurance. There's a few slides in there. Obviously, one of the levers is reinsurance. The other lever that we'd like to mention is management reporting. So management reporting is actually crucial and very critical for an insurer so they can actually get the right signals about their performance and profitability. There's obviously, you know, we can... The second little square in there is replace actual weather claims with a long-term expected average, which is what we did in the previous bar charts as well. And we can also use the ENSO in some way to normalise for weather claims. One of the things we want to talk about is claims equalisation reserves. Now, I guess to be aware here, this is not for financial reporting. This is just for internal management reporting. So it's not really an AASB view, but we still think it's very critical that our insurer can look at the underlying experience. So we've done a worked example here of what an equalisation reserve would look like on the same period of industry data. So basically what an equalisation reserve does is builds up when experience has actually been better than expected. So any difference there between claims actually increases your equalisation reserve, and you can draw down on the reserve when your experience has been worse than expected. So the actual loss ratio, which is your black line, actually improves to be quite smooth, which is a red line there. So you can actually see it actually gives you quite a smooth loss ratio. And we were really surprised when we saw this because it actually works really well over the 20-year period. So you can see it builds up to quite a nice kind of below 100% of premium level, and then it erodes, but it's never negative. Even after all these severe weather events we've had, it hasn't fallen below zero at the end of 2012. So, you know, we think this is something that can be looked at so the business can make the right decisions about how the book has been performing and what their strategy should be going forward. The other area to talk about is business planning. So when we were talking about 2007, so those were the years when all the weather was quite benign. I think at that point in time, insurers were probably thinking, well, this is a great profitable book and let's see if we can actually start marketing and getting more business instead of actually... So when they did their budget and business planning for the next year, they probably didn't even put away enough money in their budgets for the long-term expected weather claims. And that was the year when a forecast in our linear actually started and actually did... mean that insurers, even at the beginning of their financial years, probably started underperforming compared to their budgets and plans. So they've really set themselves up to fail. So we advocate that when you do business planning, you should look at what the forecast is for weather. So see if you can actually align some of that. And if not that, at least look at the expected long-term cost of weather claims. So you're actually setting a budget in mind that you can actually achieve, and it's not sending the wrong signals to management and your shareholders about how the company's been performing.
If we look now at some of the pricing and underwriting initiatives, managing portfolio mix, I think we would all know that if we diversify, we're going to get more stable results. But have we actually worked out what the best mix for our portfolio is? And that's obviously a calculation that's doable to some extent. You can get some idea, and you may be surprised what it looks like. And let me kind of propose something that, on the face of it, might seem odd. And look, I know this is flawed, but I'll say it anyway. If an insurer just wrote a Sydney portfolio, so 100% concentration in Sydney, and if we compared that insurer to a rural farm portfolio that was kind of bits all over the place, which one's going to be more volatile in its weather on a net of reinsurance basis? Now, it's quite possible that the Sydney portfolio would be less volatile because in most years there's no weather that hits Sydney. So in most years there won't be much of a weather cost, and every now and then you'll get a big one and it'll be capped at the reinsurance. And on the other hand, the rural book gets hit with lots and lots and lots of small retained losses. Now, I'm not going to suggest for a moment that that's an appropriate strategy. And, of course, there's massive reinsurance issues with having that kind of concentration in one area, and that insurer would pay a lot of their profit away to their reinsurers as profit margin. But it does make you think a bit about, well, you know, what is the process of going through and thinking about that portfolio mix and what's the right mix for us that kind of balances the profit we might get with the volatility. On the pricing side, and look, I know some of you may kind of link the profit margins you build into rates to the standard deviation. I don't know if that happens. I think it's good practice. What I'm proposing here is the same kind of idea. Here we've got two risks, A and B, and both of them have got a claims cost of $120. Now, the profit margins on home, I think we're all aware they've... Maybe a few years ago we thought 2 or 3% would be enough to service capital, and that profit margin's now maybe gone up to 6 or 7. And there's an awareness that this is a class that needs more capital, and it's linked primarily to the weather risk and the volatility that links to that. Now, you may still be building in your profit at 5 or 6% in a kind of normal profit formula. What I'm proposing is you'd actually separate that between the attritional claims and the weather claims. So for this particular portfolio, risk A has got $100 of non-weather and 20 of weather, so it's in a low weather area, and risk B's got 60 and 60, so quite a big weather component. And I'm actually suggesting you'd only stick the 2% profit margin on the attritional piece, and the weather piece you'd be loading a 15% profit margin in, because it's the piece that needs all the capital. And of course what that means is whilst they may have had the same claims cost, you finish up with a premium that's $126 for one and $132 for the other. It's that same kind of the same thing as linking the profit margin to the standard deviation, and I think that's moving us in the right direction. It means we're getting more premium in those high risk weather areas, and over the full claim cycle that's going to be better for us. And of course, to some extent, that's what's happened with the rates that insurers have been charging recently. But I just think this is a kind of an effective discipline to build into your pricing process going forward. And hopefully some of you are doing that already. Sean and I talked a bit yesterday about whether we can actually use the forward forecast to help us in the pricing decisions that we make. And we decided, for those that weren't here, that it's really difficult. I mean, the forecasts themselves aren't too bad, 3-6 months out and maybe even longer. But that beyond that, it's very hard to... But whilst they're reliable, it's actually hard to use them directly in pricing. So I'll skip that one. The address-based pricing, I did very briefly want to touch on. That's a path that we are fast moving down. The IT hurdle was a big hurdle for insurers previously. And it's amazing to see the way that's changed in such a short period of time. And that's really provided... I mean, really, you need that address-based pricing capability. It's kind of a ticket to play now for being in the home class. And if you haven't got it, then for the flood risk, you've got substantial anti-selection risks that you're facing. So it's kind of a requirement for flood. I'd say the same for bushfire. Pretty soon everyone's going to be using this approach for rating their bushfire risk, and I just put it as a ticket to play to avoid. I mean, essentially we're getting the right price for those risks, and again, over the full cycle, that's going to benefit us, and if you don't do it, your risk are being selected against. Windstorm's one, I reckon, that it's a really interesting one. I think insurers are going to take a bit of time to get there, but there's a lot of differentiation, I think, that's possible between houses that reflects the windstorm risk, and I reckon the ones that do that first are going to get ahead of the pack. So that's not an anti-selection issue. That's a... What's the opposite of anti-selection? Good selection. And the other one I think we're going to see more use over time is the kind of attributes of the home, a lot more about the kind of when it was constructed and the standards it was built to and how that impacts on its risk level. I think that's going to see it be an increasing focus in future. So that's really the one to watch, and it is going to help us over time collect a better premium pool, and indeed for those insurers that are smart, get a risk profile that's more advantageous. Yeah, I think that's all we're going to talk to, given, which hopefully leaves a couple of minutes for some questions. Elaine.
Thank you, Tim and Rashi, for a very interesting presentation. Mike, actually, I've got two questions. One question was on the claim smoothing, the smoothing reserves. We say, of course, we can't use it under accounting standards, but we can use it for pricing to really look at what the underlying portfolio is. So my question was, how do you calculate the amount that you should put away in the smoothing reserve? Because you made the point that there was still enough left at the end, but of course that depends on how much you start with.
Yeah, sure. So the way we worked out the smoothing was anything above the long-term average or below the long-term average, and the long-term average was what we expected and we would have built into our pricing. So for us, we said weather claims are around about 25% of a loss ratio, you know, are to do with weather. So it would have been based on historical experience as well as what we would have put into our pricing.
So my second question is just your reflection to your presentation yesterday when you said that really it was hard for an insurer to look at the sea temperature and then make proactive changes to pricing and have a very big impact on the bottom line. But my question was, couldn't they do some other things which would help, for example, claims management teams, get them all keyed up because they know it's going to be a bad summer? So I wondered if there might be some other things an insurer would find that useful to look at rather than just looking at their pricing.
Definitely agree. And we've talked about that in business planning as well. So part of business planning is not just budgets for weather-related claims, but also the claims cost.
Yeah, agree, Elaine.
Your slide right at the beginning kind of showed that you're probably going to need to increase prices on average if you're adjusting for the long-term weather. So my question is, to what extent, if you do all this work and price better, that becomes a competitive advantage for you, or whether you end up just losing your business to competitors who are still priced lower so that actually it's not such a good idea to do it? So it might be a gut feel answer, but I'm just interested in your view on that.
Yeah, good question. This is one of those market discipline questions, isn't it? In my view, the more we talk about this stuff and the more people become aware of the need to deal with the longer-term cost of weather in their pricing, and we've come so far in the last 5 years because we've kind of realised it's probably a bigger cost than we had appreciated, then I think those disciplines are improving. And maybe the danger will be when we have we go through another 7 or 8 or 9 years of benign costs, and will the disciplines slip off again then? And inevitably, it's one of these issues where the discipline needs to be right across the industry, because otherwise the competitive market challenges are going to present great challenges for insurers.
Just carrying on from that, the customers will think of it as being, it's been a good year, why should I be charged more? Can you comment on that? As in, if you had, you know, a series of bad years, they might expect prices to go up, whereas if they've had a series of good years, they might expect them to not go up or maybe go down.
So what we're saying here is that you won't have those years when you've had a series of bad years that your prices would have to go up significantly. You've actually priced for the longer term anyway, so you're not going to have, you know, big volatile price movements.
You and I understand that, but customers don't necessarily.
Yeah. No, fair enough, Jeff. I mean, where rates are now is pretty good. So I mean, hopefully we're not needing a situation where rate increases are going to be needed of 20 or 30% like we've seen in recent years. And so even if we're facing some tougher times, it's not like that's going to have to come through. Ricky.
How did you define weather? Were they only cat events?
It was all weather-related claims. So it's working claims and events, and it included everything from storm, you know, windstorm, flood, hail.
It's pretty amazing, that stuff, isn't it, that the actual profitability is almost exactly opposite of the underlying profitability. Mm. I think that's pretty amazing. And that's the way we've been looking at the world. I do think we've got to keep pushing with that. I don't know if it's rate adequacy indices or different management reporting, but I think it's one that the kind of this group can contribute a lot to get management seeing the results on a different basis, and that'll affect the long-term decision-making. And you know, it may not be equalisation reserves, but there's got to be some way we can do that better. Mm. Yeah, Jefferson, you had a question?
We have had prolonged periods of El Nino
I'll take that as a comment.
So the paper, there's more slides in there. There's quite a few notes in there. So we've said you've really got to think about, you know, the reserves and how you'd set them up and what the rules would be, and they'd be need to well defined. One of the examples I said was the reserve shouldn't be negative and the reserve shouldn't go above 100% of premium. So you've kind of set an upper band, a lower band. And that's what we were saying. Amazingly, when we did that over the 20 years of the home portfolio, it actually met those boundaries quite well. It built up to around about 80% and then came down to around about 5%.
The long-term, the expected weather, was that you gained that from looking over the entire sample up to 2012? Would you get a very different result if at, let's say, 2005 you would have had the rolling 20-year average then and not included past that point? You'd see a very different result because the last few years of that sample would push the whole average up quite a bit, right? So at that point in time, I think the last 5-6 years wouldn't have looked like we were under.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. We have tried to, with that long-term weather, maybe I'll get this wrong, Rashi. We looked at the longer term than just that data, didn't we? So there's a study we'd done of long-term peril costs that we actually built in that looks actually beyond that 20-year period. But I think it is also a good point to say we've all probably adjusted our view of what weather costs in the long term in response to that last 5 years' experience. I think that's a fair comment.
Hindsight's wonderful, isn't it? So.
Look, I'm surprised by those climate trends slide. I mean, I'm surprised that climate change is happening and it's going to impact insurance costs. I'm surprised people are seeing it as much of an impact so far. I see that as all down the track, in my view. So I'm surprised that 3 out of 4 see it as something that's impacting already. So we didn't make any explicit allowance for it, no.
But we've kind of shown, like, there's been quite a few studies showing that the last 5 years are with the La Nina periods. It's not, you know, it is with the climate cycle instead of climate change.
I just want to make a point for
the surveys that we've received, a lot of companies do acknowledge that climate change is happening. But at the same time, quite a number of insurers also emphasise that weather patterns is a dominant factor, and it's very difficult for them to isolate climate change effects. But most of them would acknowledge at the same time that climate change is going to affect their portfolios in the longer term.
Are there any other questions? It's good to see so many questions, and obviously it was a very interesting presentation. Thank you, Raji and Tim. So interesting that people don't even want to go for lunch.